We've been talking about conspiracy theories, and I keep thinking about a short story from way back about a guy who is so afraid that people are reading his mind, he takes to wearing a tinfoil hat to protect his thoughts. Okay, so the tinfoil part is crazy, but protecting your mind is maybe not such a bad idea. Psychologist Rob Brotherton says there are certain psychological traits, certain mental habits that we all have that predispose us to believe in conspiracy theories. For example, he cites an experiment done by a team of psychologists in Amsterdam. It involves a group of subjects and a messy desk.
This is a really interesting experiment and kind of counterintuitive. Basically, what the psychologists did was they took a group of students and they had some of them, psychologists made them feel ambivalent. So basically made them, asked them to think about something that provokes conflicting feelings. For example, you know, if you think about eating a tub of ice cream, on the one hand, you know it'd be delicious. On the other hand, you know it's kind of bad for you in the long run. So that provokes this kind of ambivalence. So the psychologist made some students feel ambivalent, and then they asked them to fill out this survey about conspiracy theories and other kinds of illusory patterns. And the people who had been made to feel ambivalent were more likely to buy into the conspiracy theories and the other illusory patterns.
Why would that be?
Well, I can explain that. The reason why ambivalence theoretically makes us more inclined towards conspiracy theories is because we don't like to feel ambivalence. We have these conflicting feelings and we don't like that. We like cognitive order, so to speak. We want all our thoughts and beliefs to point in roughly the same direction. And so when we feel ambivalent, that's kind of unpleasant, and we want to alleviate it and look for some explanation in the world that can restore our sense of order. And conspiracy theories do that in the sense that they explain unexplained events. Something inexplicable happens, we want an explanation. Oftentimes the official story isn't quite satisfying, and so we can latch on to the conspiracy theory. Presumably it helps restore our sense of order and control.
Where does the messy desk come in?
So this is where things got interesting, is that for some of the students in the experiment, at some point, the computer they were working on appeared to crash. And in reality, this was all part of the experiment. The psychologist had planned it. But as far as the participants knew, their computer crashed. The psychologist came in and apologized and said, we'll have to go to this other desk to complete the experiment. So the psychologist led the participant to another desk, and the desk was covered in mess, scrumpled up papers and food wrappers and stuff like that. And some of the participants just continued the experiment at that messy desk. Other of the participants were asked, before we go on with the experiment, will you just help me tidy up this desk? Will you move all the papers and stuff? And so as far as the participants knew, this was just like a problem the experimenters were having. It was all part of the plan, though. And what the experimenters found was that the people who worked at the messy desk, they were more likely to buy into conspiracy theories because, as I explained, they had this sense of ambivalence. They needed something to latch on to alleviate it. But the participants who had spent a few minutes tidying up the desk, they were no more likely to buy into conspiracy theories or other illusory patterns than participants who had not been made to feel ambivalent.
So the idea is that they satisfied their need for order by tidying the desk?
That's exactly right. We're all conspiracy theorists to some extent. Some of us just hide it better than others. We have always been drawn to conspiracy theories to a certain extent, some people more than others, but there's this background hum of conspiracy theories. And, you know, you can look further back into history and find a similar kind of pattern. You know, going all the way back to ancient Athens and Rome, the political speeches and the plays that were written at the time often talked about conspiracies. Even in ancient Rome, you know, the Great Fire of Rome was a classic example of people at the time, shortly after the event, started blaming it on the government, on Emperor Nero. The conspiracy theories about the Great Fire of Rome are remarkably similar, I think, to the conspiracy theories about 9/11, saying that it was an inside job, that the government was somehow involved, they knew about it, or they orchestrated the entire thing.
So explain some of the other underlying psychological traits that we have that lead us to believe in conspiracy theories. For example, there's one you talk about, the intentionality bias.
Yeah, so the intentionality bias is one of these biases, these cognitive shortcuts that I've studied. And basically what the intentionality bias is, as the name implies, is the idea that our brains make this default assumption that anything ambiguous that happens in the world was the product of somebody's intention. Somebody wanted it to happen. Somebody planned it. This has been demonstrated in developmental research, for example, in children. It seems to be the case that we're born with this bias, this assumption that everything is intentional. So if you ask a child before the age of about 4, ask them, why did somebody sneeze or why did somebody fall over? The child will probably tell you that, well, they must like sneezing or they must have wanted to fall over, because all we know at that age is that things are intentional. That's all our brain will tell us. As we get older, of course, we learn that not everything is intentional, and so we become able to override that bias to replace the default intentional judgment with a more reasoned judgment that, well, they probably didn't mean to sneeze or fall over. But what the research shows is that the bias doesn't go away. It's still there in the back of our head telling us that everything was intentional, and we can either override it or not. And so in my research, we measured how susceptible different people were to this intentionality bias. And what we found is that the more susceptible somebody was, the more likely they were to buy into conspiracy theories, which makes sense because conspiracy theories propose this world in which nothing happens by accident. Everything was the product of the conspirator's intentions.
So if somebody is inclined to be superstitious, say, and believe that, I don't know, walking under a ladder or letting a black cat cross your path or wearing your lucky shirt is going to have a particular outcome, is that an example of somebody kind of being more inclined to intentionality bias?
Yeah, it seems like there are overlaps between conspiracy theories and other unusual beliefs, let's say, superstitions, certain paranormal beliefs, New Age beliefs, even some aspects of religion, all seem to be predicated on some of these biases. In this case, the idea that things don't happen by accident. Everything happens for a reason, whether it's because of some kind of interventionist god or some overarching force in the universe or some group of conspirators.
There's some research you did that suggests that we could each actually kind of test our own susceptibility to conspiracy theories.
Sure. So one of the early research projects that I did as part of my PhD was to design a measure of individual differences in belief in conspiracy theories, because like the definition of conspiracy theory, the measurement of individual differences had kind of been overlooked as well. People had come up with various scales to measure belief in conspiracy theories, and they tended to just ask about, you know, the prototypical examples like the assassination of Kennedy and 9/11 and things like that. But the problem with that is that certain conspiracy theories go in and out of fashion and they're not all equally relevant in different countries. So I wanted to design a measure that was more universally applicable and that we wouldn't necessarily have to update over time and stuff like that. And so we designed a generic measure of conspiracism, which doesn't ask about specific theories like Kennedy or 9/11, but asks about the ideas that underlie them. So if you want to see that measure, and you're very welcome, listeners, to test yourselves, you can go to my website, conspiracypsychology.com, and you'll find the measure there.
What kind of things do you ask?
When we collected data on this, we found 5 different facets of conspiracism. One facet concerned the government, which is not surprising because so many conspiracy theories concern the government. And so we ask, do you think the government plots against their own citizens? Do you think they're involved secretly in assassinations and things like that? We found another facet that had to do with the control of information. So this more relates to conspiracy theories about scientists cooking up false data about climate change and stuff like that. So we ask, to what extent do you think scientists generally hide information, things like that. Another facet we found had to do with UFOs and aliens. So we ask, how plausible do you think it is that extraterrestrials are visiting the Earth and it's being covered up by somebody? And another facet we found had to do with small secret societies. So this gets towards the idea of like the New World Order and the Illuminati and stuff like that. And we ask, to what extent do you think that there is some secret group of elites who is secretly pulling the strings behind world events?
So I'm curious, if we're so suspicious, is there anything we can do about it? Like, what if I take your quiz and I discover that I'm very suspicious and inclined to believe in conspiracy theories? Is that just what I'm like, or can I change?
Assuming that it's true that conspiracy theories are, at least some of the time, a product of these biases and shortcuts that are wired into our brains, to make people scrutinize their beliefs a little bit more, it might be more useful to get them to scrutinize their intuition, to rely more on an analytic way of seeing the world than an intuitive way of seeing the world. And so there's a study that supports this being at least somewhat effective by a psychologist in London called Viren Swamy. And what he did was he used a pretty simple intervention to try and get people to use a more analytic way of thinking. He showed two groups of people the same conspiracy theory written down, something about the New World Order, I think. But for one group of participants, it was written in this really easy-to-read font, like bold, Arial 12-point, something like that. For the other group of participants, it was written in this cursive, swirly font that was hard to read. It was like in gray instead of black. Basically, it was designed to be difficult to read. And what he found is that the people who read this difficult-to-read conspiracy theory were less likely to endorse it than the people who read exactly the same claim, just written in an easier-to-read font. So the idea is that just struggling to read it a little bit forced people to slow down, to not rely on their intuition, to scrutinize it a little bit more, and they were less likely, slightly, to believe it.
That's Rob Brotherton,